The sky was red. The war was a day away. Polly crept along just below the ridge with the tea can. It was tea that kept the army on its feet. Remember what's real. Well, that took some doing. Tonka and Lofty, for example. It didn't matter which of them was on guard, the other one would be there as well. And they were, sitting side by side on a fallen tree, staring down the slope. They were holding hands. They always held hands when they thought they were alone. But it seemed to Polly that they didn't hold hands like people who were, well, friends. They held hands tightly, like someone who has slipped over a cliff would hold hands with a rescuer, fearing that to let go would be to fall away. Tee up, she quavered. The girls turned, and she dipped a couple of mugs into the scalding tea. You know, she said quietly, no one would hate you if you ran away tonight.
What do you mean, Oz? Said Lofty.
Well, what's there in Connect for you? You got away from the school. You could go anywhere. I bet the two of you could sneak.
We're staying, said Tonka severely. We talked about it. Where else would we go? Anyway, supposing something is following us.
Probably just an animal, said Polly, who didn't believe it herself.
Animals don't do that, said Tonka, and I don't think Maledict would get so excited. It's probably more spies. Well, we'll get them.
Nobody is going to take us back, said Lofty.
Oh, good, said Polly, backing away.
Well, must get on. No one likes cold tea, eh? She hurried around the hill. Whenever Lofty and Tonka were together, she felt like a trespasser. Wazza was on guard in a small dell, watching the land below with her usual expression of slightly worrying intensity. She turned as Polly approached.
Oh, Polly, said Wazza. Good news.
Oh, good, said Polly weakly. I like good news.
She says it'll be all right for us not to wear our dimity scarves, said Wazza.
What? Oh, good, said Polly.
But only because we are serving a higher purpose, said Wazza.
And just as Blouse could invert commas, Wazza could drop capital letters into a spoken sentence.
That's good, then, said Polly.
You know, Polly, said Wazza, I think the world would be a lot better if it was run by women. There wouldn't be any wars. Of course, the book would consider such an idea a dire abomination unto Nuggan. It may be in error. I shall consult the Duchess. Bless this cup, that I may drink of it, she added.
Yes, said Polly,
and wondered what she should dread more, Maledict suddenly turning into a ravening monster, or Wazza reaching the end of whatever mental journey she was taking. She'd been a kitchen maid, and now she was subjecting the book to critical analysis and talking to a religious icon. That sort of thing led to friction. The presence of those seeking the truth is infinitely to be preferred to the presence of those who think they've found it. Besides, she thought as she watched Wazza drink, you only thought the world would be better if it was run by women if you didn't actually know many women, or old women at least. Take the whole thing about the dimity scarves. Women had to cover their hair on Fridays, but there was nothing about this in the book, which was pretty dark, pretty damn rigorous about most things. It was just a custom. It was done because it had always been done. And if you forgot or didn't want to, the old women got you. They had eyes like hawks. They could practically see through walls. And the men took notice because no man wanted to cross the crones in case they started watching him. So half-hearted punishment would be dealt out. Whenever there was an execution, and especially when there was a whipping, you always found the grannies in the front row sucking on peppermints. Polly had forgotten her dimity scarf. She did wear it at home on Fridays, for no other reason than that it was easier than not doing so. She vowed that if she ever got back, she'd never do it again.
Was, she said.
Yes, Polly.
You've got a direct line to the Duchess, have you?
We talk about things, said Wazza dreamily.
You, couldn't raise the subject of coffee, could you? Said Polly wretchedly.
The Duchess can only move very, very small things, said Wazza. A few beans, perhaps. Whilst we really need some coffee, I don't think the acorns are that much of a substitute.
I will pray, said Wazza.
Good, you do that,
said Polly. And strangely enough, she felt a little more hopeful. Maledict had hallucinations, but Wazza had a certainty you could bend steel around. It was the opposite of a hallucination somehow. It was as if she could see what was real and you couldn't.
Polly, said Wazza.
Yes.
You don't believe in the Duchess, do you? I mean, the real Duchess, not your inn.
Polly looked into the small, pinched, intense face.
Well, I mean, they say she's dead, and I prayed to her when I was small, but since you ask, I don't exactly, believe, as, she gabbled.
She is standing just behind you, just behind your right shoulder.
In the silence of the woods, Polly turned.
I can't see her, she said.
I am happy for you, said Wazza,
handing her the empty mug.
But I didn't see anything, said Polly.
No, said Wazza,
but you turned round.
Polly had never asked too many questions about the girls' working school. She was, by definition, a good girl. Her father was an influential man in the community, and she worked hard. She didn't have much to do with men, and, most important, she was, well, smart. She was bright enough to do what a lot of other people did in the chronic, reason-free insanity that was everyday life in Munns. She knew what to see and what to ignore, when to obey and when to merely present the face of obedience, when to speak and when to keep her thoughts to herself. She learned the ways of the survivor. Most people did. But if you rebelled, or were merely dangerously honest, or had the wrong kind of illness, or were not wanted, or were a girl who liked the boys more than the old women thought you should, and worse, were not good at counting, then the school was your destination. She didn't know much about what went on in there, but imagination rushed to fill the gap. And she wondered what happened to you in that hellish pressure cooker. If you were tough like Tonka, it boiled you hard and gave you a shell. Lofty, it was hard to know. She was quiet and shy until you saw firelight reflected in her eyes, and sometimes the flames were there in the absence of any fire to reflect. But if you were Wazza, dealt a poor hand to start with, and locked up, and starved, and beaten, and mistreated Nuggan knew how, and yes, Polly thought, Nuggan probably did know how, and pushed deeper and deeper into yourself, what would you find down there? And then you'd look up from those depths into the only smile you ever saw. The last man on guard duty was Jackram, because Shufti was busy cooking. He was sitting on a mossy rock, crossbow in one hand, staring at something in his hand. He spun around as she approached, and Polly caught the gleam of gold as something was shoved back in his jacket. The sergeant lowered the bow.
"You make enough noise for an elephant, Perks," he said.
"Sorry, Sarge," said Polly, who knew she hadn't. He took the tea mug and turned to point downhill.
"See that bush down there, Perks," he said. "Just to the right of that fallen log."
Polly squinted.
"Yes, Sarge," she said.
"Notice anything about it?"
Polly stared again. There must be something wrong about it, she decided, otherwise he wouldn't have asked her. She concentrated.
"The shadow's wrong," she decided at last.
"Good lad. The reason being, our chum is behind the bush. He's been a-watching of me, and I've been a-watching of him. Nothing else for it. He'll have it away on his toes as soon as he sees anyone move, and he's too far away to drop an arrow on him."
"An enemy?"
"I don't think so."
"A friend?"
"Cocky devil, at any rate. He doesn't care that I know he's there. You go on back up the hill, lad, and bring down that big bow we got off the... There he goes."
The shadow had vanished. Polly stared into the woods, but the long light was getting crimson, and dusk was unfolding between the trees.
"It's a wolf," said Jackram.
"A werewolf?" said Polly.
"Now, what makes you think that?"
"Because Sergeant Towering said we'd got a werewolf in the squad. I'm sure we haven't. I mean, we'd have found out by now, wouldn't we? But I wondered if they'd seen one."
"Can't do anything about it anyway," said Jackram. "A silver arrow would do the job, but we've got none."
"What about our shilling, Sarge?"
"Oh, you think you can kill a werewolf with an IOU?"
"Oh, yeah."
Then Polly added,
You've got a real shilling, Sarge, around your neck with that gold medallion. If you could have bent steel around Wazza's certainty, you could have heated it with Jackram's glare.
What's round my neck is no business of yours, Perks, and the only thing worse than a werewolf is me if anyone tries to take my shilling off me, understand?
He softened as he saw Polly's terrified expression.
We'll move on after we've eaten, he said. Find a better place for a rest, somewhere easier to defend.
We're all pretty tired, Sarge.
So I want us all to be upright and armed if our friend comes back with his chums, said Jackram.
He followed her gaze. The gold locket had slipped out of his jacket and dangled guiltily on its chain. He deftly tucked it away.
She was just a girl I knew, said Jackram. That's all right. It was a long time ago.
I didn't ask you, Sarge, said Polly, backing away.
Jackram's shoulders settled.
That's right, lad, you didn't. And I ain't asking you about anything neither. But I reckon we'd better find the corporal some coffee, eh?
Amen to that, Sarge.
And our Rupert's dreaming of laurel wreaths all round his head, Perks. We've got ourselves a goddamn hero here. Can't think, can't fight. No bloody use at all except for a famous last stand and a medal sent to his old mum. And I've been in a few famous last stands, lad, and they are butcher shops. That's what Blouse is leading you into, mark my words. What'll you lot do then, eh? We've had a few scuffles, but that's not war. Think you'll be man enough to stand when the metal meets the meat?
You did, Sarge, said Polly. You said you were in a few last stands.
Yeah, lad, but I was holding the metal.
Polly walked back up the slope. All this, she thought, and we haven't even got there. Sarge is thinking about the girl he left behind. Well, that's normal. And Tonka and Lofty only think about one another. But I suppose after you've been in that school... And as for Wazza... Polly wondered how she would have survived the school. Would she have grown hard like Tonka? Would she have just folded up inside, like the maids who came and went and worked hard and never had a name? Or perhaps... she would have become like Wazza, and found some door in her own head. I may be lowly, but I talk to gods. Wazza had said, not your inn. Had she ever told Wazza about the Duchess? Surely not. Surely she... But no, she had told Tonka, hadn't she? That was it, then, all explained. Tonka must have mentioned it to Wazza at some point. Nothing weird about it at all. Even if practically no one ever had a conversation with Woz. It was so hard. She was so intense, so coiled up. But that had to be the only explanation, yes. She wasn't going to let there be any other. Polly shivered, and was aware that someone was walking beside her. She looked up and groaned. It was a tall, robed figure with a scythe.
You're a hallucination, right?
Oh, yes. You are all in a state of heightened sensibility caused by mental contagion and lack of sleep.
If you're a hallucination, how do you know that?
I know it because you know it. I am simply better at articulating it, said Death.
I'm not going to die, am I? I mean, right now.
No, but you were told that you would walk with Death every day.
Oh, yes. Corporal Scallet said that.
He is an old friend. You might say he is on the instalment plan.
Do you mind walking a bit more invisibly?
Of course. How's this?
And quietly too? There was silence, which was presumably the answer. And polish yourself up a bit, said Polly to the empty air. And that robe needs a wash. There was no reply, but she felt better for saying it. Shufti had cooked beef stew with dumplings and herbs. It was magnificent. It was also a mystery.
I don't recall us passing a cow, Private, said Blouse as he handed his tin plate along for a second helping.
No, sir.
And yet you have acquired beef.
Yes, sir. When that writer man came up in his cart, well, when you were talking, I crept around and I took a look inside.
"There's a name for someone who does that sort of thing, Private," said Blouse severely. "Yeah, it's Quartermaster, Shufti. Well done," said Jackram. "If that writer man gets hungry, he can always eat his words, eh, Lieutenant?"
"Yes," said Blouse carefully. "Yes, of course. Good initiative, Private."
"Oh, I didn't think it up, sir," said Shufti brightly. "Sarge told me to."
Polly stopped, spoon halfway to her mouth, and swiveled her eyes from sergeant to lieutenant.
"You teach looting, sergeant," said Blouse.
There was a joint gasp from the squad.
If this was the bar back at the Duchess, the regulars would have been hurrying out of the doors, and Polly would have been helping her father get the bottles off the shelf.
"Not looting, sir, not looting," said Jackram calmly, licking his spoon. "Under Duchess's regulations, Rule 611, Section 1C, Paragraph I, sir, it would be plundering, said cart being the property of Bloody Ankh Morpork, sir, which is aiding and abetting the enemy. Plundering is allowed, sir."
The two men held eye contact for a moment, and then Blouse reached behind him and into his pack. Polly saw him draw out a small, yet thick, book.
"Rule 611, he murmured.
Blouse glanced up at the sergeant and thumbed through the thin, shiny pages.
611, pillaging, plundering and looting, ah yes. And let me see. You are with us, Sergeant Jackram, owing to Rule 796, I think you reminded me at the time."
There was another silence, broken only by the riffle of the pages.
796, 796, said Blouse softly. "Ah!"
He stared at the page, and Jackram stared at him. And Polly watched Jackram and knew that there was no Rule 796. Blouse closed the book with a leathery thwap.
"Absolutely correct, Sergeant," he said brightly. "I commend you on your encyclopedic knowledge of the regulations."
Jackram looked astounded.
"What?"
"You were practically word perfect, Sergeant," said Blouse,
and there was a gleam in his eye. Polly remembered Blouse looking at the captured cavalry captain. This was that same look, the look which said, "Now I have the upper hand." Jackram's chins wobbled.
"You had something to add, Sergeant?" said Blouse. No, sir," said Jackram, his face an open declaration of war.
"We'll leave at moonrise," said Blouse. "I suggest we all get some rest until then, and then may we prevail."
He nodded to the group and walked over to where Polly had spread his blanket in the lee of the bushes. After a few moments, there were some snores, which Polly refused to believe. Jackram certainly didn't. He got up and strode out of the firelight. Polly hurried after him.
"Did you hear that?" snarled the sergeant, staring out at the darkening hills. "The little yo-yo! What right has he got checking up in the Book of Words?"
"Well, you did quote chapter and verse, Sarge," said Polly.
"So? Officers are supposed to believe what they're told." And then he smiled. "Did you see? Caught me out and smiled at me. Thinks he's got one over on me just 'cause he caught me out."
"You did lie, Sarge."
"I did not, Perks. It's not lying when you do it to officers. It's presenting them with the world the way they think it ought to be. You can't let them start checking up for themselves. They get the wrong ideas. I told you, it'll be the death of all of us, invading the bloody keep. The man's wrong in the head."
"Sarge," said Polly urgently.
"Yes, what?"
"We're being signalled, Sarge." On a distant hilltop, twinkling like an early evening star, a white light was flashing. Blouse lowered his telescope.
"They're repeating CQ, he said, "and I believe those longer pauses are when they're aiming their tube in different directions. They're looking for their spies. CQ, see? Private Igor."
"Thar?"
"You know how that tube works, don't you?"
"Oh, yes, sir. You just light a flare in the box, and then it's just point and click." "You're not going to answer it, are you, sir?" said Jackram, horrified.
"I am indeed, Sergeant," said Blouse briskly. "Private Carborundum, please assemble the tube. Manacle, please bring the lantern. I shall need to read the codebook."
"But that'll give away our position," said Jackram.
"No, Sergeant, because although this term may be unfamiliar to you, I intend to what we call lie," said Blouse.
Igor, I'm sure you have some scissors, although I'd rather you didn't attempt to repeat the word.
I have some of the appliances you mentioned, sir, said Igorina stiffly.
Good, Blouse looked around. It's almost pitch dark now. Ideal. Take my blanket and cut, a 3-inch circle out of it, and then tie the blanket over the front of the tube.
That will cut off most of the light, sir.
Indeed it will. My plan depends upon it, said Blouse proudly.
Sir, they will see the light. They'll know we're here, said Jackram, as though repeating things to a child.
I explained, Sergeant. I will lie, said Blouse.
You can't lie when...
Thank you for your input, Sergeant. That will be all for now, said Blouse. Are we ready, Igor?
Just about, sir, said Igorina, tying the blanket across the end of the tube. Okay, sir. I'll light the flare when you say.
Blouse unfolded the little book. Ready, Private? He said.
Yep,
said Jade. On the word long, you will hold the trigger for the count of two and then let go. On the word short, you will hold it down for the count of one and likewise let it go. Got that?
Yep, LT. Could hold it down for lots if you like, said Jade. One, two, many, lots. I'm good at counting. I as you like. Just say the word.
Two will suffice, said Blouse. And you, Private Goom, I want you to take my telescope and look for long and short flashes from that light over there. Understand? Polly saw Woz's face and said quickly, I'll do that, sir. A small white hand was laid on her arm. In the miserly glimmer of the dark lantern, Woz's eyes glowed with the light of certainty.
The Duchess guides our footsteps now, she said, and took the telescope from the lieutenant. What we are doing is her work, sir.
Is it? Oh, well, that's good, said Blouse.
She will bless this instrument of far-seeing that I may use it, said Wazza.
Indeed, said Blouse nervously. Well done. Now, are we ready? Send as follows. Long, long, short.
The shutter in the tube clicked and rattled as the message flashed out across the sky. When the troll lowered the tube, there was half a minute of darkness, and then,
short, long, Wazza began.
Blouse held the codebook up to his face, his lips moving as he read by the pinpoints of light escaping from the joints of the box.
W-R-U, he said, and M-S-G-P-R.
That's not a message, said Jackram.
On the contrary, they want to know where we are, because they're having trouble seeing our light, said Blouse. Send as follows.
Short, I protest, sir.
Blouse lowered the book.
Sergeant, I am about to tell our spy that we are 7 miles further away than we really are. Do you understand? And I am certain they will believe us, because I have artificially reduced the light output from our device. Do you understand? And I will tell them that their spies have encountered a very large party of recruits and deserters heading for the mountains and are in pursuit. Do you understand? I am making us invisible. Do you understand? Do you understand, Sergeant Jackram?
The squad held their breath. Jackram drew himself stiffly to attention.
Fully understood, sir, he said.
Very well.
Jackram stood to attention as the messages were exchanged, like a naughty pupil forced to stand by the teacher's desk. Messages flashed across the sky from hilltop to hilltop. Lights flickered. The clacks tube rattled. Wazza called out the longs and shorts. Blouse scribbled in the book.
S-P-P-2,
he said aloud.
Ha! That's an order to remain where we are. More flashes, sir, said Wazza.
T-Y-E-3,
said Blouse, still making notes. That, be ready to give aid. N-V-A-S-N,
that's not a code, sir, said Polly.
Private, send as follows right now, Blouse croaked. Long, long.
The message went. They watched while the dew fell, and overhead the stars came out and twinkled messages no one ever tried to read. The clacks went silent.
Now we leave as soon as possible, said Blouse. He gave a little cough. I believe the phrase is, let us get the heck out of here.
Close, sir, said Polly. Quite close.
There was an old, very old Borogravian song with more Z's and V's in it than any lowlander could pronounce. It was called Blogvjezdi, and it meant, "The sun has risen, let's make war." You needed a special kind of history to get all that in one word. Sam Vimes sighed. The little countries here fought because of the river, because of idiot treaties, because of royal rows, but mostly they fought because they had always fought. They made war, in fact, because the sun came up. This war had tied itself in a knot. Downriver, the valley narrowed to a canyon before the Knek plunged over a waterfall a quarter of a mile high. Anyone trying to get up through the jagged mountains there would find themselves in a world of gorges, knife-edged ridges, permanent ice, and even more permanent death. Anyone trying to cross the Knek into Slovenia now would be butchered on the shore. The only way out of the valley was back along the Knek, which would put an army under the shadow of the keep. That had been fine when the keep was in Borogravian hands. Now that it had been captured, they'd be passing in range of their own weapons. And such weapons! Vimes had seen catapults that would throw a stone ball 3 miles. When it landed, it would crack into needle-sharp shards. Or there was the other machine, which sent 6-foot steel discs skimming through the air. Once they'd hit the ground and leapt up again, they were unreliable as hell, but that only made them more terrifying. Vimes had been told that the edged disc would probably keep going for several hundred yards, no matter how many men or horses it encountered on the way. And they were only the latest ideas. There were plenty of conventional weapons, if by that you meant giant bows, catapults, and mangonels that hurled balls of Ephebian fire, which clung while it burned. From up here, in his drafty tower, he could see the fires of the Duggin army all across the plain. They couldn't retreat. And the Alliance, if that's what you could call the petulant hubbub, didn't dare head up the valley into the heart of the country with that army at their back, yet didn't have enough men to hold the keep and corral the enemy. And in a few weeks it would start to snow. The passes would fill up. Nothing would be able to get through. And every day, thousands of men and horses would need feeding. Of course, the men could, eventually, eat the horses, thus settling 2 feeding problems at a stroke. After that, there would have to be the good old leg rotor, which, Vimes understood from one of the friendlier Slovenians, was a common feature of winter warfare up here. Since he was Captain Hopalong Splatzer, Vimes believed him. And then it would rain, and then the rain and the snow melt together would turn the dam river into a flood. But before that, the Alliance would have bickered itself apart and gone home. All the Borogravians had to do, in fact, was hold their ground to score a draw. He swore under his breath. Prince Heinrich had inherited the throne in a country where the chief export was a kind of hand-painted wooden clog. But in 10 years, he vowed, his capital city of Rigor would be the Ankh-Morpork of the mountains. For some reason, he thought Ankh-Morpork would be pleased about this. He was anxious, he said, to learn the Ankh-Morpork way of doing things, the kind of innocent ambition that could well lead to an aspiring ruler, well, finding out the Ankh-Morpork way of doing things. Heinrich had a reputation locally for cunning, but Ankh-Morpork had overtaken cunning 1,000 years ago, had sped past devious, had left artful far behind, and had now, by a roundabout route, arrived at straightforward. Vimes leafed through the papers on his desk and looked up when he heard a shrill, harsh cry outside. A buzzard came in a long, shallow swoop through the open window and alighted on a makeshift perch at the far end of the room. Vimes strolled over as the little figure on the bird's back raised his flying goggles.
"How's it going, Buggy?" he said. "They're getting suspicious, Mr. Vimes, and Sergeant Angus says it's getting a bit risky now if they're so close."
"Tell her to come on in, then."
"Right, sir. And they still need coffee."
"Oh, damn, haven't they found any?"
"No, sir. And it's getting tricky with the vampire."
"Well, if they're suspicious now, then they'll be certain if we drop a flask of coffee on them."
"Sergeant Angus says we'll probably get away with it, sir. She didn't see why."
The gnome looked expectantly at Vimes. So did his buzzard.
"They've
come a long way, sir, for a bunch of girls. Well, mostly girls.
Vimes reached out absent-mindedly to pet the bird.
Don't, sir, she'll have your thumb off, Buggy yelled.
There was a knock on the door, and Reg came in with a tray of raw meat.
Saw Buggy over, Ed, so I thought I'd nip down to the kitchen, sir.
Well done, Reg. Don't they ask why you want raw meat?
Yes, sir. I tell them you eat it, sir.
Vimes paused before answering. Reg meant well, after all.
Well, it probably can't do my reputation any harm, he said. By the way, what was going down in the crypt?
Oh, they're not what I'd call proper zombies, sir, said Reg, selecting a piece of meat and dangling it in front of Morag. More like dead men walking.
Yes, said Vimes.
I mean, there's no real thinking going on,
the zombie went on, picking up another lump of raw rabbit.
No embracing the opportunities of a life beyond the grave, sir. They're just a lot of old memories on legs. The sort of thing that gives zombies a bad name, Mr. Vimes. It makes me so angry.
Morag tried to snap at another lump of bloody rabbit fur that Reg, oblivious for the moment, was waving aimlessly.
Reg, said Buggy.
How hard can it be, sir, to move with the times? Now take me, for example. One day I woke up dead. Did I?
Reg,
Vimes warned as Morag's head bobbed back and forth.
Take it lying down, no. And I didn't.
Reg, be careful. She's just had two of your fingers off.
What? Oh.
Reg held up a denuded hand and stared at it.
Oh, now, will you look at that?
He peered down at the floor with a hope that was quickly dashed.
Blast. Any chance we can make her throw up?
Only by sticking your remaining fingers down her throat, Reg. Sorry. Buggy, do the best you can, please. And you, Reg. Go back downstairs and see if they've got any coffee, will you?
Oh, dear,
murmured Shufti.
It's big,
said Tonka. Blouse said nothing.
Not seen it before, sir,
said Jackram cheerfully as they stared at the distant keep. If there is a fairy tale scale for castles, where the top end is occupied by those white, spire-encrusted castles with the blue, pointy roofs, then Kinnec Keep was low, black, and clung to its outcrop like a storm cloud. A bed of the Kinnec ran around it. Along the peninsula on which it was built, the approach road was wide and bereft of cover, and an ideal stroll for those who were tired of life. Blouse took all this in.
No, Sergeant, said Blouse. I've seen pictures, of course, but they don't do it justice.
Any of them books you read tell you what to do, sir, said Jackram.
They were lying in some bushes half a mile away from the keep.
Possibly, Sergeant. In the Craft of War, Song Sung Lo said, to win without fighting is the greatest victory. The enemy wishes us to attack where he is strongest, therefore we will disappoint him. A way will present itself, Sergeant.
Well, it's never presented itself to me, and I've been here dozens of times, said Jackram, still grinning. Ha! Even the rats should have to disguise themselves as washerwomen to get in that place. Even if you get up that road, you've got narrow entrances, holes in the ceiling to pour hot oil through, gates everywhere that a troll couldn't smash through, a couple of mazes, 100 little ways you can be shot at. Oh, it's a wonderful place to attack.
I wonder how the Alliance got in, said Blouse.
Treachery, probably, sir. The world's full of traitors. Or perhaps they discovered the secret entrance, sir. You know, sir, the one you're sure is there. Or perhaps you've forgotten. It's the sort of thing that can slip your mind when you're busy, I expect.
We shall reconnoitre, Sergeant,
said Blouse coldly, as they crawled out of the bushes. He brushed leaves off his uniform. Thalacephalos, or as Blouse referred to her, the faithful steed, had been turned loose miles back. You couldn't sneak around on horseback, and as Jackram had pointed out, the creature was too skinny for anyone to want to eat, and too vicious for anyone to want to ride.
Right, sir, yes, we might as well do that, sir, said Jackram now, all gloating helpfulness. Where would you like us to reconnoitre, sir?
There must be a secret entrance, Sergeant. No one would build a place like that with only one entrance. Agreed?
Yes, sir. Only perhaps they kept it a secret, sir. Only trying to help, sir.
They turned at the sound of urgent praying. Wazza had fallen to her knees, hands clasped together. The rest of the squad edged away slowly. Piety is a wonderful thing.
"What is he doing, Sergeant?" said Blouse.
"Praying, sir," said Jackram.
"I've noticed he does that a lot. Is that, within regulations, Sergeant?" the lieutenant whispered.
"Always a difficult one, sir, that one," said Jackram. "I have, myself, prayed many times on the field of battle. Many times have I said the soldier's prayer, sir, and I don't mind admitting it."
I don't think I know that one," said Blouse.
"Oh, I reckon the words'll come to you soon enough, sir, once you're up against the foe. Generally, though, they're on the lines of, 'Oh, God, let me kill this bastard before he kills me.'"
Jackram grinned at Blouse's expression.
"That's what I call the authorized version, sir."
"Yes, Sergeant, but where would we be if we all prayed all the time?" said the lieutenant.
"In heaven, sir, sitting at Nuggan's right hand," said Jackram promptly. "That's what I was taught as a little nipper, sir. Of course, it'd be a bit crowded, so it's just as well we don't."
At which point, Wazza stopped praying and stood up, brushing dust off her knees. She gave the squad her bright, worrying smile.
"The Duchess will guide our steps," she said.
"Oh, good," said Blouse weakly.
"She will show us the way."
"Wonderful. Did she mention a map reference at all?" said the lieutenant.
"She will give us eyes that we might see."
"Ah, good. Well, jolly good," said Blouse. "I definitely feel a lot better for knowing that. Don't you, Sergeant?"
"Yes, sir," said Jackram. "'Cause before this, sir, we didn't have a prayer."
They scouted in threes, while the rest of the squad lay up in a deep hollow among the bushes. They were enemy patrols, but it's not hard to avoid half a dozen men who stick to the tracks and aren't being careful not to make a noise. The troops were as Labenian, and acted as though they owned the place.